I'm Mark Dugan, Arizona Public Media, and this is Copper at the Crossroads, a multi-part series on the past, present, and future of Arizona's copper industry. This week, we'll hear from both sides in the effort to increase copper production in the state and take a particularly close look at the proposed Rosemont mine south of Tucson. Rosemont Copper proposes to build and operate an open-pit mine in the Santa Rita Mountains. Part of their plan calls for piling waste rock on U.S. Forest Service land and using the water from an area aquifer. A key environmental impact report on the mine is set to be released soon. There's a lot of organized opposition to the proposed mine, and tomorrow we'll hear from some of the people who are trying to stop it. But today, we hear from someone who very much expects the proposed mine to open. Could you start by introducing yourself?
Okay, I'm Rod Pace, President and CEO of Rosemont Copper. I've been with the company now for about 3 years.
So how did you come to be the president of Rosemont Copper?
Well, the president and CEO of our parent company, Augusta, Gil Clausen, and I worked together when I was with Washington Group International, and he talked to me about the project, and I really liked what I saw about it because it was a chance to come to Arizona and look at design of mine using 21st century technology, so we could use some things different here. So that really attracted me to this project.
The Rosemont plan of mining operations calls for using public lands, specifically Coronado National Forest lands, to pile waste rock tailings. Those tailings will actually be piled right over the current location of the Arizona Trail. Mr. Pace, I was wondering why public lands were chosen for waste rock storage.
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, people have a misconception of what waste rock is. It's not, they think of a landfill. That's really not what this rock is. This is just rock that doesn't have ore in it. So it's material that comes out of the ground that's not economical put through our process plant. And as far as the space, we have what's called unpatented mining claims on the Coronado Forest Service that allows us to put some material on the Forest Service. We do need a large area, but the processes we're using currently with the Rosemont project for a similar sized mine using old technology, we use twice as much land. So we can use a lot less land with the new technology, but we still do need a lot of land.
Let's talk about the area around the mine. It's pretty rural and dark at night, and there's also a major observatory within just about 20 miles. Can you address fears by some people that the mine will create light pollution that will affect both quality of life and area astronomy?
Yeah, I think that we understand that as far as the dark skies go, a lot of astronomy going on. We're trying to do what we can to minimize our effect of light pollution. We can do a lot today because we can use the sodium lights. We can also use reflectors and shields on our lights to point them down. And so what we're showing is we can meet the dark skies initiative in that area by taking measures into our hands.
Now, there's also been a viewshed analysis, as it's called, that basically states how the mine will affect area views, particularly from Highway 83, which is designated a scenic road. Your own analysis admits a slight bit of the open pit will be visible from the highway.
Anything above about the 5,500 level, you could see, because our reclaim goes up to about 5,450 elevation, so you could see some upper benches, but there's very little above that area, so there's very little you'd actually see. Most of the pit will be below the ground.
Some area residents have expressed concern about the increase in truck traffic along Highway 83 between Interstate 10 and the mine entrance road. And that highway, as it approaches the mine entrance, is pretty twisty and windy with some pretty short sight lines. How do you address their concerns?
Well, if you've driven down from I-10 down 83 towards Sonoyta, our mine access road would actually be before you start getting those windy roads. So that helps somewhat, but there will be some impact. And we've been looking at our traffic surveys, how we can mitigate those impacts. And we can do a lot by scheduling. We're going to run 2 12-hour shifts, so we only have people coming twice a day. They come in off-peak hours. And we can also schedule the truck traffic coming into the mine, so we miss the off-peak hours and school hours. So we can, by the way, we schedule things. We can really help mitigate some of those impacts by traffic. Plus, the traffic study we've done showed that we need to put some pull-out lanes on some of the hills where the trucks can pull over and let the cars pass. Because one of the issues you do have in Highway 83 is very narrow. So looking at possibly some pull-out lanes and also some school bus stops and some of those things that we can do that would really help.
We're talking with Rod Pace, president of Rosemont Copper. Mr. Pace, there was a time when copper mining was, well, kind of loosely regulated, particularly with regard to environmental issues and the long-term reclamation of mining sites. Well, these days, there's a lot more regulations and permits to go through, and mining companies even have to post bonds before they can start digging. I was wondering, do you think the industry is better for having to follow these guidelines? In other words, is copper mining as lucrative an industry as it used to be, given all the regulatory hoops you have to jump through today?
It all depends on the price of copper. Today, the price of copper is almost $4 a pound. In some of the old days, we were looking at 60 cents a pound copper. But yes, as far as the bonding goes, there are multiple bonds. We have to get federal bonds. We have to get state bonds. We even have to get county bonds that put in place before we start the mining process. So, you know, I think this is good for the process and for the industry, really.
Mr. Pace, copper prices are at an all-time high right now, but just a few years ago, the market was bust. Mineral markets do tend to be a little volatile. I was wondering, what would happen if copper prices suddenly crash again? Would that affect the Rosemont mine?
Well, if the copper price did drop, I mean, the copper does go up and down. We've seen it for the last couple hundred years go up and down. And the one nice thing, if you look at the Rosemont project on a cash cost basis, once it's developed, it takes $1 billion to develop it. But once it's developed, those are sunk costs. Those are building the facilities, buying the mining equipment. It actually operates on a cash cost that puts it in the lowest 25% in the world, 25 to 30 percentile in the world, which means if you look at mines that shut down and start up again, it's the ones that are 50 percentile and above are ones that are affected. So we would see Rosemont, once it's built, it would keep operating.
Now, speaking of copper markets, there are some who say the copper that Rosemont proposes to mine isn't really needed, that other mines and companies already have excess capacity and some of their facilities aren't even operating at full production. What do you say to that?
Well, I'd say it's completely untrue, because if you look at the price of copper a day, the mines that are operating below capacity would be ramping up to meet that capacity. I mean, copper's selling at $4 a pound, and if the mine could up its production 25% profitably, it would do it. I mean, it is very hard to start a new mine, and mines are closing all the time. The grades are going down on mines, and so you're seeing you need mines replacing ones that you do lose.
Your company literature says the Rosemont deposit is kind of rare and that it's not so common anymore to have such a rich mineral deposit that's still undeveloped and commercially viable. Now, that seems to say most of the best deposits in Arizona have already been mined, and that this may be one of the last best ones around. But I've also heard the concentration ratio, as they call it, of the ore you'll be mining at Rosemont is pretty high, which means you'll have to extract a lot of rock to get a little bit of copper. So is Rosemont really considered a rich deposit, having to create so much waste rock to find a relatively small amount of extractable copper there?
It is today. I mean, if you look at back in 1800s, we were mining higher grades. We didn't need as much copper. With the way technology changed today, you have a flotation process you didn't have in 1800s. You're using open pit mining, came around in about the 1920s. Then you started using trucks and big shovels in the 50s and 60s. So what we saw, the grade of copper continues to go down, and you can mine economic deposits that are much lower grade these days. And today, this deposit is considered a good grade deposit for what you have. It's about 0.5% copper grade. And it's also a large deposit. It's about 500 million ton deposit. So it's a deposit that lasts around 25 years.
Rod Pace is president and CEO of Rosemont Copper. He joined us in the studio recently to talk about some of the issues surrounding his company's proposal to build and operate a 20-year open pit copper mine in the mountains south of Tucson. Mr. Pace, as proposed, Rosemont is an open pit copper mine, and I was wondering if there was ever any consideration given to making it an underground mine.
No, we definitely looked at the underground possibilities too. And for this deposit, an underground deposit, you need a grade that's probably about 2% grade, 1.5-2% grade. And for the most part, this is a large disseminated deposit. It doesn't have any like high grade pockets you would go after underground mining for.
Your parent company is Augusta Resources out of Canada, and about 3 years ago, Augusta CEO Gil Clausen admitted there were other copper deposits near Rosemont that might be worth developing someday. The Peach, Elgin, Broadtop Butte, and Copper World deposits. And if they were all to be developed someday, they would essentially create a new mining district there in the northern Santa Rita Mountains. I was wondering, are there any plans today to develop more than just the Rosemont deposit?
You know, right now, Augusta is focused on Rosemont. Rosemont's all on the east side of the Santa Rita Mountain Range. Some of the other deposits you mentioned are on the west side of the Santa Rita Range. We have no plans to develop those. And if we ever develop those, it would have to go through a full EIS process, just like we're doing with Rosemont right now. So I don't see those developed anytime in the near future.
Mr. Pace, your company's plan of mine operations makes it clear that post-mining, long-term, the open pit will not be filled in. So what happens to the hole? Is there a presumption that it eventually will fill in with water?
You know, we're not on a major aquifer in that side. We have what's called fracture zones that water flows in. And the pit will reach some level eventually of water, but it'll probably take anywhere from 150 to 200 years to fill to a level. So there's not a lot of water in the area, but eventually it would fill with water, yes.
Your plan with Rosemont calls for mining at the site for 20 years. So paint us a picture of 20 years from now. Extraction is over. Reclamation's in full swing. The slopes of the tailing piles are being revegetated. So how do you handle the enormous open pit? I mean, obviously, it would be fenced off.
The pit would be fenced off to keep people away from it. It'd have to be. But again, the way the reclamation is designed is that we can build a buttress around and we can reclaim around the pit. So the general public wouldn't see that pit unless they happen to be hiking on top of the mountains or on top of the reclaimed area that we reclaim. You wouldn't see it from the road. You might see a few of the upper benches along the ridge, but that's about all you would see.
Let's talk about water usage. Your own company literature says the mine will use 5,000 gallons a minute, 24 hours a day.
You know, the use of water is recycled. We need about 5,000 gallons per minute. It's probably about the right flow rate, but we actually, what we do is all of our processes are designed to recycle water. So as far as the makeup water, we're looking at about 5,000 to 6,000 acre feet a year of makeup water we need that we can't recycle. And if you look at that compared to mine that would have a tailings pond would use twice as much water. So we can save water by at least 50% by using recycling the water.
You've proposed to use water from an underground aquifer and from the Central Arizona Project. Can you guarantee you've planned for enough water to operate this mine without affecting other water users?
Yeah, I think that we agree. When we did the first survey, the number three concerns we heard from the public were water. You know, how much water we can use, where the water is going to come from, and are we going to pollute the water? Those are the three main concerns of the public we heard when we first looked at the mine. And we chose very carefully where we take the water from. We looked at where the water should come from. Should it come from the east side? Should it come from the west side? Can we use cap water? We looked at all these options. We felt the best option was using the Tucson aquifer water because we could recharge water back in the Tucson aquifer. We have no permanent allocation, Rosemont doesn't, to CAP water. So we couldn't use CAP water on a dependable basis because we don't have an allocation to it. So then we had to look the next best source. And the next best source is using the Tucson aquifer because we can recharge water back in Tucson aquifer. And so what we did is we have our permits currently, our permits to pump underground water from the Tucson aquifer, which is permits 6,000 acre feet a year of water to pump. And we're not required to put water back into Tucson aquifer, but one of the things, being a responsible corporate citizen, we decided to do, especially in this area, is we said we would replace all the water we do use. And so we have been buying water from the CAP and recharging into the Tucson aquifer for the last 4 years, actually. We've put in 45,000 acre feet of water into Tucson aquifer right now, which is about 8 years' worth of our water needs. And that's one reason, the main reason we chose the Tucson aquifer, because the size of aquifer and the ability to recharge in that aquifer. And, you know, we intend, you know, people say that we don't want to use the cap water, but we'd be happy to use the cap water for our process. If we had an allocation where we could use it, would not be an issue with Rosemont. We'd use the cap water before we use the Tucson aquifer water.
We're talking with Rod Pace, president and CEO of Rosemont Copper, the company proposing to build a 20-year copper mine in the mountains south of Tucson. There's been a war of competing economic reports on Rosemont Mine's impact on the local economy. One from Arizona State University touts the economic benefits of the mine, and another from the University of Montana says the benefits would be negligible. The University of Montana report even claimed that the Rosemont Mine threatens more jobs than it creates. Can you respond to that?
Yeah, I've looked at his report, and there's really no facts he uses back to me materially up. And if you look really at the Rosemont project, and look at other mining projects, look down in Green Valley, look at other mines, that what you'll see is you'll see development around the mines. You're not going to see a loss of development. You actually see people starting to develop around the mines. You'll see business develop around those mines too. I certainly don't see a loss of business from the mine going in there.
Mr. Pace, is this Rosemont Copper's first foray into actually building and running a mine?
The people that are with Rosemont that's what we've done all of our life. We've operators, we've designed, we've developed mines, we've started mines. You know, I have experience. I've started 7 different mine locations, different copper projects, gold projects, coal projects. So that's what I've done all my career, is actually starting up operations.
Well, some have accused you of being too inexperienced to actually run a mine.
I address those accusations. If they look at the resumes of our people, you'll find that this is what I consider some of the best people in the industry developing this mine, not only in the mining, but also in the processing side, in the milling side, in the environmental side. We've kind of put together what I consider almost like the dream team to develop an operation using 21st century technology.
Mr. Pace, several environmental groups have filed suit to stop the mine on the grounds that it will affect certain rare and protected fauna and flora. Do you see any basis in any of their arguments?
You know, I think if you look, it's probably fairly normal, any mine operation, when you're looking at it. There are, one of the things you do look for species that plant and animals, make sure you're not going to have a negative impact on threatened species. We're fortunate we don't have any endangered species on the site. There are some, like you said, there's a snail, there's a orchid, there's some plants that we're doing further investigation on. They're, you know, they're plants that may be listed to put on an endangered list down the road, so we're looking at them very carefully. And the one thing we're doing is we're trying to design our operation to not impact those as much as we can. We can move things around a little, like the orchids, for instance. The biggest population of them was found in the site where our facilities will be, so we can move the facilities so we don't impact that site. As far as for, there's a snail population. And the snail population, that when they, we've done a lot of surveys, Westland has done a lot of surveys for us, and what they're finding is there are a lot of snails all along the range. In fact, on the east side of Santa Rita is probably a smaller population because it's where the south sun hits all the time, and the snails really like more on the west side. So, you know, we're going to continue to probably hear about plants or animals or something that's possibly in danger, and we take it very seriously, and we have consultants hired just to look at that, how we can mitigate and the impact as much as possible.
We're talking with Rod Pace, President and CEO of Rosemont Copper. The U.S. Forest Service has received a draft environmental impact statement on Rosemont Copper's mining proposal, but is currently reviewing it internally. They plan to release it to the public sometime this spring. Have you seen this report?
You know, personally, I have not seen a new draft EIS. It should be available. The Forest Service is reviewing it right now. Like you said, November 15th, they received it from SWCA, which is a contractor for Forest Service. They're internally reviewing it this time.
Now, depending on the nature of the EIS, as it's called, the Forest Service reserves the right to demand that you change some parts of your mining operation plan. So what kind of changes would satisfy the Forest Service? Would you have to relocate the open pit?
You know, the pit probably won't change. I imagine pit will stay where it is, but some of the things they will change, to look at changing some alternatives, maybe where the material that's non-ore gets put, and the outside placement of it could change. It could move to a little different drainage. So that's basically what I think they'll be looking at, where to place material that's non-ore, and also your what's called the dry stack tailings. That could also move locations too.
Now, as a point of disclosure, Rosemont Copper has purchased underwriting announcements on this radio station. You've also bought commercial airtime and sponsored events like concerts and even placed some print ads. I was wondering, are these kind of media and PR activities normal for a mining company these days?
You know, I would think so. And based on my 30-year history, you know, I think we probably, this is the first time we've really been in a mine industry. The mining industry typically is kind of closed and kind of quiet, but we made a decision to be transparent and public, so we're trying to get the facts out and try and answer questions where we can. So yeah, I would say this is probably atypical.
Mr. Pace, Rosemont Copper has been pretty heavily vilified in certain corners. Some people say the company has a benign public face, but behind the scenes is quite ruthless. How do you respond to such accusations?
You know, I think if you hear a lot of opposition, and the opposition is very loud, but I think from the surveys we've taken that shows there's continual support for the project is building. I think the majority of people these days do support the project, even though you do hear a lot of opposition from the minority. And I think the reason why it was spread, because there's a lot of misinformation out there.
For much of our interview today, I've had you respond to various accusations about how the Rosemont mine might affect certain things. I wanted to give you an opportunity to just speak from your heart, something maybe you wanted to add to this whole conversation about the Rosemont mine.
Well, I think one thing we didn't talk much about is that, you know, if you really are interested in this project, you do need to go out to the site and learn more about it. And I've been in the business for 30 years now, and the people that we've hired for this project are the best in the business. There's a lot of local people are using. When we look at building this project, we give preference to local companies. So it's going to bring a lot of jobs to local industry. We've had a lot of different support now from some of the chambers have stepped up to support us. If you look at the builders, contractors are all supporting this project. And we want to be part of this community. We're going to give back to this community. And we pride ourselves on being transparent as possible. And in the long run, this project, when it's up and running, it's going to require about $1 billion to build it. And it's going to employ 500 people in directly, which will be the mining people, at salaries of 60,000 plus that don't necessarily require a college degree for all the jobs. And mining is one of those businesses today that for every direct employee you employ, there is probably about 4 to 5 indirect employees, because we don't do a lot of the non-core businesses. We don't do we don't do uniforms, we don't do security, we don't do the reclamation, we don't do transportation of the ore, we have contractors fuel us. So this job will bring a lot of jobs to this area for next 25 years. And not only bringing the jobs is important, I think it's really important that this will be done as environmentally friendly as can be for a mine. There are impacts. We will have impacts like we talked about. There will be an open pit left. There will be some visibility on some of the upper ridge lines from the Highway 83 as you drive by. But we can do a lot of things different than were done 50 years ago when the mines in the Green Valley area were developed.
Rod Pace is president and CEO of Rosemont Copper. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Pace.
Thank you.
There's more information on the proposed Rosemont mine at azpublicmedia.org. You'll find a longer interview with Rosemont President Rod Pace, images of the Rosemont site, and the company's plan of mine operations. I'm Mark Dugan, Arizona Public Media.